we will move on to our last case for this morning, United States against Carmel. Mr. Kelly.
Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Chris Kelly. I represent David Carmel in this appeal from a judgment of conviction for possessing or failing to register, actually, and failing to pay the tax upon a number of machine guns. We have raised five issues on appeal. The first two deal with the search warrant that was issued in this case. The last three deal with the validity of the statute pursuant to which Mr. Carmel was convicted. With regard to the warrant, this is another case in which we have a very skinny search warrant affidavit. The affidavit consists of a probable cause statement, which is five paragraphs long. The most damaging paragraph from the standpoint of creating probable cause says that an undercover officer had a telephonic conversation with Mr. Carmel, and during the course of that conversation, Mr. Carmel said that he had a Rheinmetall MG3 and MG34 and a Heckler & Koch HK21.
And all three of those guns are machine guns, right?
The affidavit
doesn't spell that out, but they are.
The probable cause statement doesn't say that at all. The affidavit to which the probable cause statement is attached makes a bare-bones assertion. It says three machine guns identified as, and then names those guns.
But we have actually a lot more in this affidavit than in the one we were just discussing. We've got, as you said, the identification of the three guns. We've got the statement that he'd have a weapon to shoot any ammunition. We've got the M16 parts. We've got the machine gun barrel. I mean, we're not trying to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt at this point. We're just trying to create probable cause.
I understand that, but I don't believe any of those other factors create probable cause either. With regard to the
plus, we've got these phone calls that took place before the critical call, all recorded.
But the phone calls, he does say, I have a weapon, or bring any ammunition you have, I'll have a weapon to shoot it. Doesn't say I have an illegal weapon to shoot it. The same ammunition you can shoot from a machine gun, you can shoot from a semi-automatic gun. So that doesn't tell us that, he's not saying I'll shoot it with a machine gun or an illegal gun.
No, but as you well know, I mean, we're talking totality of the circumstances here, and when you've got these ominous-sounding weapons that somebody else knows more about than I do, the Rheinmetall MG3, and the officer did have training in weapons. He was a former Marine. He had training. He said he knew what they were.
Well,
officers do bring expertise like that to bear on.
He doesn't say he knows what they were, and he doesn't say that he was trained in machine guns. I don't know that military training teaches anybody about what are essentially antique German guns, and I don't know why it would. And he doesn't say, I knew from my training and experience that a Rheinmetall MG3 is a machine gun. I don't think the record tells us whether a Rheinmetall MG3 is always a machine gun
we've also got the arrest situation, too, don't we? It's part of the affidavit with the two top handles for an M16. I understand your argument that there are other purposes it could be used for, but based on this training, he says that without this part, the M16 would be unable to function unless the weapon has been altered.
He does say that, and I think that's one of the reasons that it was also error to deny us a Franks hearing, because we established in the affidavit that we filed in support of the motion for a Franks hearing that, in fact, these top handles are the same top handles that would be used on an AK-15, which is the semi-automatic, perfectly legal, and widely distributed version of the M16.
But just because it could be used for another purpose. So you're saying because it could be used for another purpose, we just ignore the fact that it could be used with an M16.
I'm saying it doesn't create probable cause that Mr. Carmel possessed machine guns if he has a top handle for a widely available legal semi-automatic weapon. And if, in fact, the officer had the training and experience that allowed him to know that a Rheinmetall antique German firearm is a machine gun, he should certainly have had the training and experience to know that a top handle that fits on an M16 is the same top handle that fits on an AK-15. And that's, I think, why we were entitled to a Franks hearing, to establish that he had that information and deliberately or recklessly omitted it from the affidavit that he used in support of the warrant. With regard to the the last point is that the warrant application also relies on...
But let me just get back to your point. Of course, if the affidavit had said that, and the top handle is used exclusively for M16s, then I could see why a Franks hearing might be necessary. But his statement wasn't that. It didn't exclude it. He just said it could be used, and the only way it could function would be to have the top handle.
Right. He says two top handles made for a M16 machine gun.
And he says, based on my experience, without this part, the M16 would be unable to function unless
right.
it had been altered.
But the top handle is not made just for an M16. It's also made for an AK-15. And he omitted that information. And the AK-15, again, is a weapon that is in mass distribution in this country. It is more probable, if somebody is carrying around this top handle, that he's carrying it around for an AK-15, which is widely available, than for an illegal M16. And the last point on the probable cause issue is that the officer relied upon Mr. Carmel calling his father and saying, "You can guess what I was arrested for." The magistrate viewed that as a confession, essentially, that Mr. Carmel had machine guns. But Mr. Carmel was being investigated for the theft of military supplies, as the warrant affidavit says. So it seems to me that the more reasonable inference is that you can guess what I was arrested for. It's for this theft that they've been investigating me for.
Is there any evidence to suggest that Mr. Carmel knew that there was a federal warrant out for him for allegedly stealing military property?
I don't think the record speaks to that.
So, I mean, I agree with you that that's very ambiguous evidence, and certainly if that were the only thing, this would look like a different case to me. But since we don't really know what the state of Mr. Carmel's information was on this other allegation, I guess the magistrate judge thought the obvious thing is that he has all these guns and his father could guess what the arrest was for. I don't know. I mean, it's definitely not one of the government's stronger points.
Okay. Moving to the statute itself, Mr. Carmel was convicted of possessing unregistered machine guns and failing to pay the registration tax. This is a tax statute, 26 U.S.C. 5861D, is a statute that requires anybody who has a machine gun to register and pay the registration tax on that machine gun.
But, you know, it's quite possible for a person, maybe not Mr. Carmel, but it's quite possible for a person to have a registered machine gun and have to pay the tax. They just had to have had it before 1986.
True.
Many of us are old enough that we were actually adults at that point. And Congress passes statutes for everybody, not just for Mr. Carmel.
That's true. But after the enactment of 18 U.S.C. 922-0, the Internal Revenue Service no longer registers machine guns and no longer collects that
922-0 to say is it forbids civilian possession of any machine gun not lawfully possessed as of the effective date of the statute. So if you, on January 1st, 1986, had a machine gun, then you still were able to possess it and you weren't underneath 922-0.
True. But that couldn't have been the case with Mr. Carmel.
No, not
given
him
his
personally,
age.
But there are other people. I mean, there. In other words, Congress hasn't passed a pointless statute. There are a set of people, not including, I agree with you, Mr. Carmel, but there are a set of people for whom these two statutes operate quite reasonably together. And for the set of people like Mr. Carmel, as other courts have pointed out, you know, in his case, it really may just be a duplicative prohibition. But why does it say that Congress can't pass duplicative prohibitions?
Well, even if the two aren't irreconcilable, and the Dalton case found that they were, I don't think that argument or that position addresses the due process problem, which is that Mr. Carmel is being prosecuted for doing something he could not have done.
Well, he's being prosecuted. if he had not owned the machine gun at all, then he wouldn't have had an unregistered machine gun, right? So he could have complied. It's just that he can't own the machine gun and comply. And that's why I say Congress has just gotten at this problem through two different statutes. One of them is a tax and registration statute. The other is just a straight-up criminal statute. But Congress, you know, if the worst thing Congress ever does is pass things that are duplicative, we should probably all thank our stars.
Well, I think Mr. Carmel could have been prosecuted under 922. I don't think there would have been an issue then. But making the choice to prosecute him for not registering and paying a tax on a gun when the law does not allow him to register and pay a tax on the gun seems to me to be a serious due process problem. And the way to get around that due process problem is to charge him under Title 18, not to charge him under Title 26. Thank you.
Okay. I always quail at the pronunciation of your name. You're Ms. Zerblinski, is that?
Zerblinski, right.
Zerblinski, okay.
RZ, isn't that how everyone says it?
Okay.
I'll start with the last point first. And actually, in this case, Mr. Carmel did comply in with respect to one machine gun with 5861D. He did, in fact, have one registered machine gun.
And how did he comply? Did he have it? Was it registered before 86? Or
right, because what can happen is you can transfer a machine gun that was legally registered prior to 1986. So if you view it as of 1986, all the machine guns that are out there and legally possessed can be moved around. It's the government's way of keeping track of what's out there and to ensure that there aren't any more machine guns registered after 1986. So in fact, Mr. Carmel did comply with the law with respect to at least one of the over 60 machine guns that he had. He could not have complied with it with a lot of the other ones, perhaps because there was some evidence that he was making or converting guns into machine guns. So those certainly he could not have complied with 5861. But as this court has recognized, he didn't have to possess machine guns at all. It was simply illegal for him to do so. He chose to do so, and that's how he found himself here.
Well, I'm curious as to why you changed the charge from possession of machine guns under 922-0 to not registering machine guns under 5861-D, because we would still be here on the probable cause issue, but not on this statute.
Right, and when I looked at the amount of weapons that Mr. Carmel had, and when I looked at 922-0 and saw the exception for guns manufactured and legally possessed prior to 1986, I thought my safest route was to go with 5861, because what I knew for sure is that he had registered one, but not the others. And from my standpoint at that time, and based on my understanding at that time, I thought it was the safest statute to go with. It was the one that I could grasp most readily. And perhaps standing here today, I'd make a different decision. But I think either decision is valid and legal. With respect to the
sentencing ramifications for the choice?
No. With respect to probable cause, I think the court really hits it head on. Here, I listed at least six things that were in this affidavit. Just because it's five paragraphs long doesn't mean it's not long enough, because what we're looking at here is really something very limited. What the investigator wanted to do was to get into Mr. Carmel's residence and get the machine guns that he believed he had based on Mr. Carmel's statements to the undercover officer. Investigator Holum made clear that his training and experience was in the Marines and law enforcement. That would be consistent with an M16, which are military weapons. That's where his experience lied. So when he saw those top handles, that's what he connected it to. M16s, top handles, that's what makes a machine gun function. That inference is very easy to make, that if he knows how to make a machine gun function, then he knows what a machine gun is. So when Mr. Carmel is spouting off these terms that I had to read a small manual to try to figure out, Investigator Holum knew just what he was talking about. And while this affidavit could have been more eloquently drafted and perhaps had a few more facts, I think it certainly had enough to make a reasonably prudent person think that there'd be machine guns at Mr. Carmel's house. And
but Mr. Kelly suggests, you know, if for every one M16 out there, there are 99 AK-15s, why wouldn't we at least need to explore further whether this was any evidence of potential unlawful activity,
because
the handles I'm speaking of.
Right, because we had other bricks in the wall. I mean, what we had was Mr. Carmel talking about machine guns. Most machine guns possessed out there right now by people are illegally possessed based on the law. So you've got that. Then you've got the invitation to the undercover officer to come and shoot. You've got the statement that says,
Why is that bad? I mean, you know, he doesn't know that the agent is going to bring ammunition that could only be used in unlawful weapons. Maybe he's got a wide array of hunting weapons and handguns and all sorts of other things. I have a weapon to shoot any ammunition you could bring. What's so bad about that?
Well, he's already talked about machine guns to start with. So when he says, I have ammunition to shoot any weapon that you could bring, that would suggest something maybe in addition to legal weapons. I'm not suggesting he didn't have any legal weapons, because he had lots of stuff. But mixed in with that, he had lots of illegal weapons. You've got the machine gun top handles. He admits that he has machine gun barrels and that he brought them back into Wisconsin. Now, that in and of itself doesn't mean a whole lot. But coupled with the statement that he's got three machine guns, he then also says that he's registered one machine gun. So now he's talked about three. He says he's registered one. I think a reasonable inference to that is, well, the other two are not registered, because if they were, you would have offered that that information to us. And then with the final statement, standing alone again, to his dad, the feds arrested me, you can guess what for. There is nothing in the record to suggest that Mr. Carmel knew he was under investigation for the theft of the military devices that he had. You'd have to even take it one step further and say that beyond him knowing that, he told his dad that. Hey, Dad, guess what? Look at all the stuff I stole. I sure hope I don't get caught. I think it's just as reasonable that his dad knows his son is a gun nut and has got a whole bunch of guns laying there, and he got caught. And so I think that when you add all of these things together, you certainly have probable cause for this warrant. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. Kelly? All right. Well, we appreciate you took this as an appointed case, did you not? We appreciate very much your assistance to your client and to the court. We thank you as well, Ms. Shablinski. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess until tomorrow morning. Thank you.